WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Griffin Bloomstein, Josh Rother back with you as always. Week one of the college football slate has come and gone. The ACC is kind of a wild conference this year for football. I'm excited to see how it all plays out. Syracuse obviously handled business against New Hampshire 66-3. We got the ACC basketball schedule for Syracuse that we'll talk about a little today, and then preview Syracuse's matchup next week with Cal. Josh, as of right now, it looks like it's pouring outside, which is now you look a little wet. I know you walk home from class, but this is now the second Wednesday in a row it has torrential downpour.
Yeah. And I don't know why it is, but I feel like I do have an umbrella here, but every time I leave my house to go, like on Wednesdays, I have class from like periodically throughout the day, but like not enough to like walk back home and then walk back to class. So like I leave my house at 10 and it's sunny and it's 78 degrees. And I'm like, oh, it's a beautiful day. And then all of a sudden throughout the day, I'm like, oh, it's getting cloudy. And then it just like starts pouring. And I'm like, maybe I need to start keeping an umbrella in my bag, especially on Wednesdays.
Yeah, I think every other day will be fine. Wednesdays we might need to make that adjustment, and let's talk some basketball first, because I feel like we haven't really talked much basketball for Syracuse in a while. Syracuse's ACC gauntlet came out, because that's what it is. Yeah. It's a gauntlet. It's going to be hard. And a couple interesting things. I think the biggest one for me that I noticed right off the top is that Syracuse plays Duke home on January 5th on a Tuesday when there's going to be no students. It's going to be a 7 o'clock game on a Tuesday. So I'm not sure how many fans that's going to draw. As long as it's not like a 9:30 Tuesday game that we had like four of those last year.
Yeah.
But a Tuesday when there's no students? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, Griffin, inevitably everyone or someone out of the conference has to take them. Like, Duke has to play someone over break on the Tuesday. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like we would be pretty high on the pecking order. If you're looking at schools that like, Duke can't go play Wake Forest or Boston College.
Boston College.
Like, it has to be Syracuse. I don't know. It definitely, it's not cool because, I mean, I'm looking at it as, the numbers, right? So I bought the 4-year pass when I was a freshman, and like, I didn't go to a basketball game last year. And I didn't go to a basketball game last year because obviously like we work during them. And so I would just sell my tickets. And like a big thing for me this year was the Duke game was going to, because always, you know, everyone goes to the Duke game. There's always students that need tickets. So I was looking at it as I'll be able to sell, because I'm trying to claw back the money I spent on the 4-year pass. But now it's like, I'm not going to have anyone to sell it to because there's going to be no one here. There's going to be no one here. And there's going to be no one at the game. So, Man, because I mean, that is a really important game. I mean, GMAC literally almost beat Duke in March Madness. And now, like, it throws them at a disadvantage. It's like, oh, they were so close at beating them last time. They can't possibly give them an advantageous spot the next time. So let's put them on a Tuesday where no one's going to be at the game. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it was disappointing to say the least. Because some other interesting road trips, Syracuse takes on Florida State. That is a couple days before New Year's. They take on Miami on the road, Pittsburgh, and then three home games, Louisville, Boston College, North Carolina. Then you go to California, and this is
Yeah,
something
I like
that
that.
is going to be, I think, pretty fascinating. That was a, remember that game against Cal last year that went into overtime. Someone on the AER airwaves, I don't remember who, said that it was the craziest game they've ever seen and asked if we were still on the air. Shout out my
Well, that
good
was when the
pal. But
power went out or the scoreboard went
yep, the
out in
scoreboard went out. Drew
overtime.
Alba went crazy. It was Nico Horning, Drew Alba masterclass.
Yes.
Shout out for two friends of the pod. And so I mean, that was a fun game. Stanford, obviously.
Oh my, do you remember that? Do you remember the last time we played at Stanford? It was 29 to 2 at one point. And it was an 11 p.m. tip.
Oh, was that the night that it might have been at Cal or at Stanford when Luka Doncic got traded? I remember it.
I don't think it was Stanford because I remember it was I just remember because me and my roommate had stayed up and watched. We stayed up to watch the Stanford game, and then we like were like tuning into the double overtime, and we were like writing casts. And I was like, "Wow! Like it's really 3:30 a.m. and Syracuse Orange just posted the post game press conference of a game that we literally lost by 30 points."
Yeah, no, it was Cal.
Yeah.
Syracuse played Cal last year at Cal, and the game started at like 11, and it was like middle of the game. Luka Doncic got traded. So good memories of Syracuse at Cal,
Good preview for.
which happens again. They go to California 2 years in a row, which is interesting.
No, it
No more
wasn't
trips.
last year. We played him at the dome last year. Or did we have a. No, because the Doncic trade was 2 years ago.
Yes. Sorry, 2025. Wow,
Yeah.
it's already 2026. That's
It's
how
crazy.
you know the times have turned here. Wow, 2025 was going to be two basketball seasons ago.
Yes.
It's kind of hard to imagine, but an interesting schedule for Coach Mack and company, GMAC. They got at Notre Dame, at Virginia Tech,
Yeah,
SMU, Clemson.
one thing I thought was interesting, you got four teams from the state of North Carolina and you play all four of them at home. Or no, you don't even get NC State this year, sorry. So you play three of them at home, and this is the part I don't understand, the home and home with Stanford, and we just don't play NC State. As that's the
Yeah.
last bullet point on the press release. That is just I don't understand that. I don't understand why. I mean, the traditional series with Pittsburgh, I'm cool with that. Why does it need to be a home and home with Stanford and then just completely omit a team from the sky? Like, that does not make sense at all to me.
That's some
Especially a team with
fascinating.
history. Like, when you look
Yeah.
at, Kwadir and whatnot, like, this is a team that, it was kind of not really like a, chippy or more important game last year. But I mean, it was a topic of discussion last year. And for that to just be left off is. Not cool. I don't like
We'll see if the non-Will Wade NC State Wolfpack have any struggles in their first year after Wade departs back to LSU. Let's switch over to football. We don't really have any more basketball news as of now. I think Amari Monroe is still fighting his case and try to become eligible.
it.
We'll give updates if we have it there. I know some high-level recruits have come and visited Syracuse and are in the process of visiting. In the next couple of weeks, it's probably time in the next month or two that we hear of some recruits committing potentially as part of this next class. But someone that did have a lot of recruits this weekend was Fran Brown and Syracuse, as they typically do, and those recruits got to see a very, very fun game. I would say Josh and I were texting throughout the game. We were both in attendance. We were inside the dome. And 66-3 is, I think, we both said Syracuse would cover the spread, and we were both right. 66-3 is a score that it should be. Like, that's what Syracuse should do to New Hampshire, is completely lock them down on the defensive side. New Hampshire really didn't have anything going offensively. They got lucky because Syracuse committed a lot of penalties, that gave them favorable field position a couple of times, and even got them back the ball at one point. But this was a game that Syracuse, if they want to be a presence in the ACC, you had to come out and look dominant against New Hampshire, and they did.
Yeah, for me, past the eye test, there was a couple of things that I couldn't, I didn't really like. I mean, first of all, I don't know why Angeli was in the game so late. I mean, I understand wanting to get him back to game speed. You have the fall in the second quarter, and everyone's like, "Oh my God, the season's over!" Like we're doing this,
It
we're
was
really doing
scary.
this again, like 2 quarters into the new season, and like, while that's great. I don't know why, like, after at a certain point, because he was in the game, I think, until it was 53, or was it 57?
And we knew that was going to happen. Fran was like, yes, they're going to play. And I had a feeling that it was going to go well into the third quarter, if not touch the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
And
so yeah, he had the drive where he threw the touchdown to Hatcher, and at that point, it was the fourth quarter already. Like, why was he in the game in the fourth quarter?
that's a question. I mean, to some extent, he hasn't played football in 9, 10,
Yes.
11 months. And so getting out there, this is the first time that he was hit. And when he did go down, the dome was silent.
Yeah.
And it was scary. Like, watching it happen, it was like, oh, just flashbacks. Like,
Yeah.
I legit was like, oh, this is happening again. And then he ran off the field and the dome erupted, which was kind of a cool sight, I would say.
Well, and I
But
think that wasn't even the loudest they got. I thought the loudest when Angeli got when the late hit on Angeli when he was running, when he was trying to show off some of that mobility. Oh my gosh. I mean, the crowd was beside itself, and rightfully so. I don't know how that ended up being an offsetting penalty because of just how brutal that hit was. It was a low hit on a quarterback who is not defenseless when they're out of the pocket, but it was out of bounds. And that was just one where you're like, oh, he might not get up from that, but he did, and he stayed in the game, and he only missed one play as the operating quarterback, and I thought he looked a little slow, a little sluggish. I think his footwork was a little rusty from obviously missing game action. I thought he was a little slow in the pocket, but I mean, that throw to David Clement, the second
That was
touchdown
nice.
throw to Hatcher. I mean, he had a couple really great throws where you're like, okay, this is a Jeff Nixon offense again. And, it's good to have Steve back. And it really, I thought the offensive line and the running backs kind of took the pressure really off his plate, like from the get go. I mean, when you got a true freshman in Chevain Anderson doing what he did, it made it easy for Steve.
Chevain Anderson, 102 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns, freshman. Only 10 attempts, so 10 yards per carry. You mentioned kind of like the Jeff Nixon offense. And I would say this is kind of a shock in a sense of what we've seen from a Jeff Nixon offense with a true QB1.
Yeah.
As a team, Syracuse attempted 34 passes. Steve Angeli went 20 of 29. We saw Kyle McCord throw 40 or 50 passes last season and not really think twice about it. Syracuse ran the ball 43 times.
Yeah, that's unlike
It
Nixon to do. And honestly, I look back at Kyle
worked. I
McCord's
loved
first
it.
game when he started against Ohio, the opening drive, he threw three straight passes. This opening drive, Tyreek Hill ran the ball the first three plays. And that's I think that's going to be a key for them this year because they just showed, I mean, they gave tape, of course, to other teams, but they just showed this is a team that will run the ball and will do it successfully. This is a team that played without their expected top two running backs. And yes, it's an FCS team. But when they're showing you this look that they got Chevain Anderson, they got Tyreek Hill had a couple big run a few big runs. And then, Matt, I wasn't really too impressed with Matt Outten, and I know it was his first game, seeing that, but I mean, when they're showing you that, and then you got to worry about Steve, this is like a reverse of last year when it was like, here's Ricky Collins, and this is all you have to do to stop us.
Yeah, I agree. I was really impressed. If and we understand it is against New Hampshire, but the eye test was met with Tyreek Hill and Chevain Anderson. Like those guys looked legit. They could move. They could bully defenders. They were breaking tackles and they were making guys miss, which is good to see. And like you could see, they had vision for the end zone, which is something that I think at times Yasin Willis had, and you could definitely see that LeQuint had vision for the end zone. Sean Tucker had vision for the end zone, and Tyreek Hill and Chevain Anderson, their eyes were they were at the end zone and making sure that they could get in there. And Chevain, was it Chevain that had another one called back because of a penalty? There were a couple of at least one touchdown that got called back. And so you have to
I think it
figure
was
that,
Chevain, yeah. And then I think he ended up scoring later, or maybe that was the David Clement drive. I think
I'm
they
trying
still
to.
ended up scoring on that drive. I could be wrong, but
Yeah, but potentially. But that was kind of the offense. It looked well. It looked like it should have. And Syracuse comes away with it with a good win, I would say. On the defensive side of the ball, I told you, and I want to make this very clear. I said Keyshawn Johnson
yes.
would be dominant, and Keyshawn Johnson looked really, really good. 2.5 sacks, four tackles, a forced fumble. This was a guy that showed that he was an All-American at the FCS level, and he can dominate FCS teams. I think he'll translate really well against ACC play. He's fast, he's mobile, he can swim, move, he can dodge. You know, he had a bunch of different stuff in his arsenal, and he really, really showed that he could play. I couldn't really tell much besides that. The defensive line is looked good. Like New Hampshire didn't really get much going. Syracuse swallowed everything up. The corners locked down. No one really made that much flashy plays in the secondary. From what I saw, I wonder if Josh, you have anything else, but Rashad Perry had that nice interception.
Yeah,
Obviously,
that
Moultrie
was great.
Goddard with the touchdown. It was just like solid. The
Gamias
defense
or
played solid.
Gamias Sackey with a fumble recovery as well. I mean, I really didn't think New Hampshire really tested, and that's fine. I just didn't think New Hampshire's quarterbacks really tested anything. Everything was towards the sideline, and short. There was nothing. There was no stretching the ball. I think they had one double digit play the entire game, and it was a 40-yard run where just the secondary kind of collapsed and broke down, and that was really it. That was their lone highlight of the game. So they pitched a one hitter, if you want to look at it that way. And honestly, with the takeaways they had, because they don't call them turnovers, Griffin, they call them
Yep.
takeaways now.
True.
I thought it was a grade A performance. You keep them out of the end zone, which was important. I think before the game we had said, okay, UAlbany, let them score 14 points. So you cannot let them score close to 14. You keep them in the single digits and it's a win. And I thought we both had the same takeaway that after the game, it was the defense that looked more impressive than the offense. And they both looked great. So you really don't have too many complaints coming out of the game.
Yep, special teams wise, the returners looked really, really good. Holdings did hamper Syracuse
Oh
a little
yeah,
bit on special teams.
that was not a good spot, because
No.
Dimitri Samuel could have
So he looked so
legitimately
good.
cut the offensive, like he could have cut the offense's yardage in half in this game. Syracuse's average starting field position could have been at New Hampshire's 35-yard line if you take away the four holding penalties on the punt returns. Like he looks insane, and I know this is an FCS team, but if he even does, a shell of that, if he has one return per game like he did against New Hampshire, I mean, he's basically a 3 to 5 point per game like
Swing.
swing just on the special team, which is incredible.
Davion Kerr also looked good. I know Davion Kerr also played a little bit. I think he might have gotten called for a holding once. Or no, Davion Kerr blocked the
Davion
kick.
Kerr blocked a punt, I think.
Davion Kerr blocked a punt. Davion Kerr was used as a punt returner, kickoff
Yes.
returner. So you got to keep track of those. That's going to be hard all season, but we will manage for sure. I thought in the two punts, my guy Jimmy Gregg looked really good.
Yes.
Um,
Hey, we did
and then
have to use
triple.
him on the first drive.
Yes, it
But it
was a
was
work in
okay
progress.
because I think it was downed at like the 5-yard line. So he did his job and he was very happy. I think he celebrated nicely after too.
Shock. That's what my punter should do. So not too many other takeaways from this game against New Hampshire. I was impressed with what Vince Karras and Jeff Nixon did. The line looked pretty good, creating some big holes for the running backs. And then it'll be interesting to see how the squad battles against a Cal team that did not play well at all against UCLA. Jaron Kiave, Saga Polutele. Right? I got that.
Tangapolatelli.
Tonga Politele. We practiced a little bit. I still messing it up. But he has all the talent in the world. And I think it'll be interesting to see if, and he might not even play. He
Yeah, I saw
walked
some on
off.
Twitter, yeah.
He walked off the field. He's probably questionable to play. And he's a guy that, kind of gives Cal all their life. Like he has all the talent in the world, can throw the ball however far or wherever he wants. But he's a little, interception prone. He's a little wild with his passes. So I think this will be a very good test if he plays for Demetrius Samuel and Chris Peel, who got a targeting penalty that just can't happen again. He's lucky the new targeting rules. He will not be out of this game on Saturday. He will be able to play. But if Sanga Polutele got that one right, if he's not playing, then I think Syracuse is going to be favored, and I think Syracuse should have the advantage going into this one.
Well, they already are favored. It was actually interesting to see the line movement from right before to maybe after they had caught wind of the potential injury to him. And Syracuse was quickly swapped from I think it opened as a 3.5 point underdog to now a 3.5 point favorite. So taking into consideration just how much, and this is pretty typical, I would say, at the college level for a guy who's been a starting quarterback for over a full season now to potentially playing someone that hasn't started in that offense before. My main takeaway is that Jeff Nixon should operate with the same game plan as he did. Obviously, you need to be more selective with, your play calls when you're going up against an ACC opponent, but Cal battled back in that UCLA game and really showed, I think they had a couple 90-yard touchdown drives in that game, and they really showed, the depth of their playbook. But then when the offense faltered, the defense was nowhere to be found. I mean, they couldn't tackle anyone. UCLA averaged almost 15 yards per carry in the second half. They had like over 200 yards on the ground in the second half, and it was just like 30-yard play, 50-yard touchdown, 40-yard touchdown. It was like, wow. If you're looking at a Syracuse team that just showed you three different guys, two or three different guys that can run the ball right down your throat, and then you add in Juwan Johnson and Ahmad Miller, who are, Fran has said, will likely play this week, I'd be scared if I was Cal because, I mean, when you got big Byron Washington out leading this line, pushing Cal's edge rushers and their tackles back, I think that's a scary thought. And you're coming into a loud house that Brian Blair is putting on display, 63% off tickets.
Yeah,
I
it's a good
think
deal.
Syracuse is sitting pretty good going into this game. This reminds me a lot of the Georgia Tech game my freshman year in terms of this could set the tone for a potentially good season. This could be the win that kind of snowballs down the line. You start looking at, you got Pitt next week, then you got a couple weeks off. You got UConn, you got Virginia. If you get a pretty, I would say this is still a pretty big win, even if Sanga Politelli is not fully healthy or if he doesn't play. This is still an important win. I mean, you're looking at going to Pitt next week and having a chance to go 3-0 to start the year. And this is a big game.
Yeah, I agree, and I don't want to touch on Pitt too much, but we said win three of the first four, and you'd feel pretty good about a bowl game. Mason Heinsohn did throw for 7 touchdowns
He
week
looks
one,
pretty good.
but then they did allow 14 points to Miami of Ohio. So, I not that Miami of Ohio is not they're definitely better than New Hampshire, but that is still something of note. Pitt always going to be hard, especially on the road. I'm excited for this Cal game. I think if JKS doesn't play, I expect SU to win by double digits. And I don't think that's too crazy to say. I just really like the way they played. I think the defense, I'm not really nervous at all about. I think the offensive side of the ball is where I'm a little more nervous. Is are there pass catchers other than Umari Hatcher that are really going to make an impact?
Yeah.
That's what we really didn't see.
We didn't.
Tyshawn Russell, Dante Bauchier, David Clement, Cole Weaver all caught a couple passes, but Noah Myers wasn't really a factor, only one catch against a team like Cal, where they will have a defensive back that maybe not will shut down Umari Hatcher, but for Steve to spread the ball out a little more, who's going to step up and be that wide receiver too?
Absolutely. And I think you got to factor in Justice Ross Simmons could make his return this week, and
Yes.
that provides
Yes.
complications for Cal because, I mean, you look at Steve, who had, like you just mentioned, only Umari Hatcher really stood out. And then you got Hatcher on the left and Ross Simmons on the right. Then it becomes a little bit easier to get the ball to, your David Clements, your Noah Myers, your Cole Weaver, who I thought Cole Weaver did a good job as a pass catcher and as a blocker in week one. And that's kind of something we expected to see out of him coming into the season. And I think we saw that in week one. So I think JRS being back in the lineup could also be big because, however that conversation went down, what we talked about with Steve getting JRS back, I think that's going to be important because that's going to be his go-to guy if he's in the lineup. That was a guy who caught four touchdowns from Steve last year.
The JRS JKS showdown is what we all want to
Yes.
see. I really want, I hope JKS plays. I think it would be very fascinating to see how Syracuse can test to probably one of the ACC's top quarterbacks. And then obviously we learned some other news from Fran Brown. He gave us a little sprinkle, maybe Calvin Russell coming back a little bit early.
Goodness.
I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. Calvin Russell,
I
Fran said
mean,
a few weeks.
then you really start getting amped up because if you got Calvin Russell out there with Hatcher and JRS, it's like,
That's a
wow.
deadly combo.
Keep them all on the field and like this is a new team. I mean, from what we were looking at last year, just wow.
And our old friends Jonte Cook and Daryl Gill did not catch a
One
pass
target.
against one target
One target from Jonte Cook.
with Ole Miss against Louisville. Who knows, maybe if they could have been here and Steve could have had some more friendly faces around. But yeah, not the case. Syracuse plays Cal 3:30 on Saturday. This is it for the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Make sure to tune into that one at 3 with McClure Remodeling countdown to kickoff, double overtime live until 8:30. That will be a fun one for sure, breaking down Syracuse's first ACC game of the season. Again, Josh and I will have Ostrom picks on Twitter to see our full ones there. I think Syracuse is going to get this done regardless. I think Fran Brown, year three, might have a little juice to him this season. Thanks for listening. Make sure to tune in to previous episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or at WAER.org. Thanks for listening.